Hello, and welcome back to AASA, the School Superintendent Association's Public Education Policy Podcast, or PEP Talk for short. I am Kat Sturdivant, the AASA Advocacy and Governance Coordinator, and your producer at the top of each episode. So this month, I was spitballing some ideas with my colleague Tara Thomas, our policy analyst who I interviewed on the last episode, and we thought about continuing our trend of episodes about rural programs, and we thought it'd be a really timely idea to talk about the Secure Rural Schools program. So in this episode, I interviewed Tara about the finer points of the program and what's at stake if it's not reauthorized. And then Tara interviewed Jamie Green, superintendent of Trinity Alps Unified School District in Weaverville, California, who's a passionate advocate for this program. So without further ado, let's get to the episode. I'm here once again with Tara Thomas, AASA's policy analyst, and we are continuing our focus on rural schools from the last episode on the REAP program. This time, we're going to talk about the Secure Rural Schools program. So, Tara, what is the Secure Rural Schools program?
Well, first of all, Kat, thank you for having me back. Excited to be here. But the Secure Rural Schools program, so under federal law, state and local governments receive payments through various programs due to the presence of federally owned land within their jurisdiction. So military bases, forest land, national parks, all of those many different types of federal property, essentially. And Secure Rural Schools is a program for counties who have forest lands within their district or within their jurisdiction. So originally, funding was provided to these counties based on revenue that was generated from the forest. So things like timber sales, recreation, permits, etc. There was always a portion of that revenue went to the counties kind of in recognition that they're not able to generate property tax on their own. And so they need kind of funding from other sources. But in, you know, the 1990s, revenue started declining significantly. Timber sales drastically declined because of protections and other reasons. And so Congress, kind of in recognition that these counties were losing really critical funding, decided to pass the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act, which provides funding directly to those counties. So instead of doing that revenue sharing model, they just started providing money directly to those counties.
So what is the funding structure for this program? And why are we talking about it for this episode?
Yes, of course. The Secure Rural School payments, or SRS payments, as we refer to them, you know, we love an acronym here, are really, the payments are divided kind of into three titles, kind of three buckets of how the money is allowed to be spent. And we're really interested in Title I. That is where the majority of the funding goes. And Title I requires that funding really be spent on either schools or roads, and that's it. And so a lot of the school districts within these communities, because they don't have property tax, really rely on that Title I funding. The Title I of Secure Rural Schools, obviously there's a lot of other Title I funding when we're talking about federal education funding, but Title I of Secure Rural School payments, they really rely on that funding for their general budget. Since about 2007, so Congress passed the bill in 2000, and they funded it through 2007 to be kind of reauthorized, which is something we talk about for big bills. So basically, bills expire and they have to be reauthorized. And so since about 2007, Congress has been reauthorizing this program for short periods of time. And so we're kind of constantly, it feels like, in this loop of pushing Congress to make sure that they reauthorize it. So it was last reauthorized in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act in 2021, and that's through fiscal year 23. So we're really at that crucial point where we need Congress to reauthorize this program, and we need them to do it now. So if they don't reauthorize it, the last time they didn't reauthorize it was back in 2016. If they don't reauthorize it, what happens is basically the program pivots back to that revenue sharing model, which means that all of these counties would lose a significant amount of money, and it would happen quickly. And so when we're talking about schools, as you know, budgets are created months in advance. There's planning that needs to be done. And so significant decline like that in funding would have a really a really terrible impact on the schools that rely on this funding. In preparation for this conversation, I actually sat down with Superintendent Jamie Green of Trinity Unified School District in California. He is a superintendent who relies on secure rural schools and as such has become a really passionate advocate for the program here in DC. He's come numerous times. And so I sat down with him to kind of understand what this program looks like at the district level, what it means to students and communities, what the impact is if it's not reauthorized, and then also where we're at when it comes to advocacy. So take a listen. And just a flag for listeners, this interview was edited for brevity and clarity. All right, Jamie, let's start with an introduction. Can you just introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your district?
Okay. My name is Jamie Green. I'm the superintendent of Trinity Alps Unified School District. I've been the superintendent now for 6 years, and I've been in the district for 27 years. I started as an English teacher, then the counselor, and now the superintendent. We're in very, very rural Northern California, and we have 700 students. We're very broad with where we have to go to get students. We travel an hour and a half each direction on the compass to pick up our students. So it's very geographically challenged, let's just say, to get all our kids here every day.
Great, thank you. So let's start with what secure rural schools, or what we'll probably refer to moving forward as SRS. Okay. Let's kind of talk about what SRS means for your district. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly you rely on that funding for, what it means for students and your community?
So for 115 years, it's been the lifeblood of our school district, as schools are funded big time on property taxes. And without the federal income there, we have no way of collecting taxes on those lands. So in my district, we get between $500,000 and $600,000 a year. And the year 2004, on today's income, and I have the data for that, we had $2 million that came into my district. So it's went down by 75%. So our worry is if it goes to zero, we're looking at laying off anywhere from 6 to 8 employees. And it's not just us in California, it's 41 different states. So when we started this and we started meeting with the people in DC, our concern was to help the other 4,400 schools as well as help ourselves.
You know, I think $500,000 to $600,000 is a pretty big number for a lot of people that I don't think they're expecting to hear when we're talking about this program. So yeah. You said that you would have to lay off possibly some staff, and you have experience already of this program failing, right? So back in 2016, Congress failed to reauthorize the program, and you were at your district at this time. Can you talk a bit about what that actually meant for your budget and what you had to do in response to Congress's lack of action on the issue?
Sure. So in that situation, that was the first time. So it went down to roughly 35,000. So a publicly elected school board had to make choices. Are we going to feed kids first? Are we going to transport students? Are we going to buy books? Or are we going to do maintenance repairs on the school? We didn't know what the effect was going to be, but the board had to protect as many jobs as possible, protect the free lunch program, serve our people. And unknowingly, by not doing those critical repairs, we ended up having toxic mold throughout our entire district. And I think it was 18 or 19, I was superintendent at the time. Toxic mold was discovered, and our elementary school and our high school were completely shut down by health officials because of the toxic mold. I would like to think, had we had the ability to do the necessary repairs, that we might have been able to avoid that. But the people before me, I don't blame any of them. You don't know what you don't know. And the choices our board made and the school administrators before me made the tough choices they had to make to do as good a job as you could with students. Once we found out the buildings were unsafe, then we had to immediately react to that. But that's a direct correlation of where if you don't receive funding that you've received for 115 years, where are you going to cut? The public board has to make a decision on that. And that money hasn't been an extra money. There's a big gap between urban and rural, how much money goes per student. In California, some schools get as much as $33,000 per student. Some schools get as much as $10,000. That's a $20,000 per student gap. because those areas that collect very high property tax, because that's how the school system's built in California, they're able to really fund at a high level, which is beautiful. We want as much as we can get for all children. But in our situation, where 80% of our land surrounded by my district is federally owned land, and there's no money coming out of it, then that freezes our ability to be able to run our school.
So let's pivot to the advocacy part of this conversation, because that's the real piece, right? We need Congress to do what we're asking them to do and to reauthorize this program. And I know you've been working really hard to put pressure on Congress to do the right thing. And so in your experience, what do you think is the biggest barrier to Congress taking action on this?
They care. They generally care. They want to pass this, but they're also responsible to make sure that we're sustainable as a country. So, you know, certain representatives, whether it be Democrat or Republican or more conservative, they're nervous about spending ongoing monies. We totally respect that. We have to do that in our district. So our goal was just to be positive. And I've got to travel with so many organizations. The last time I went, AASA was with the National Forest and Schools Coalition. Everybody is bonding together, CSBA, SSDA, AXA. I've got to travel with the most amazing lobbyists in the world. And we've learned that the lobbyists are there. They're there to help us. But if we don't get out of our town and our chairs and go tell our story, then that's on us. Because we've worked so well with the lobbyists, because they're there, they have regular relationships, they help get us in the door. And then the senators and representatives, they've listened. We've yet to have somebody tell us no, that absolutely we're not going to fund that. They just, some people say they need more time to look into it.
You know, when we think about what Congress kind of has on their plate, like you said, there's a lot of different federal programs, and every federal program has a story of what that money means for different communities and different groups of people and in different places. And so I guess if you were talking to a member of Congress and you had to, you know, explain to them quickly what Secure Rural Schools means for your district, and how important it is and kind of what's at stake, what would you say?
What we've talked to them about is thousands of people will be laid off. So we will lose thousands of educators. The forests are not producing money anymore. When we went back, I think the third time, we went with the National Rural Ed and Alan Pratt. Well, I got to meet people from Kentucky that get this money and Texas that get this money. And we were all in the same area. Rural America is rural America. We all chip in. We do whatever we can to make it. It's small town, small America. But without this funding source, it will absolutely disrupt education for thousands and thousands of kids across the country. One of four students in America goes to a rural school. And it's really an equity between the urban and rural. And urban has their challenges. Rural, we have our challenges. But if this money goes away, it's going to be critical. Students are going to get hurt. And we're just trying to avoid that. That's why we went 11 months ago. What our concern is we've met with, like, for the South Carolina representative, Mr. Norman, to invite us to fly back and meet with them and passionately talk about this is amazing. Mr. Huffman, Mr. Malfa, Mrs. Letlow, they've all invited us back to talk about it. So I have to think in my heart of heart that it's going to get there. I think it's with G.T. Thompson now in Pennsylvania, and he's an absolute champion of education. My pitch would be is, please, guys, put this into committee, mark it up, and get it out. We need this. And to top it off, I know you guys read the news. I'm from California. We are projecting a $68 billion deficit in California over the next 3 years. So you want to talk about not in my stomach? 11 months ago, we were coming because we were concerned that without that property tax money from the federal government, we weren't going to be sustainable. Can you imagine what the state of California is going to have to do in education? I'm not going to blame them at all. If you don't have $68 billion, you can't spend it. So this money to California is probably more crucial than to any other state right now, just because of the situation we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are all the questions I had for you. Okay. Is there anything else you want to share or touch on? Anything else around the program?
I just want to say, in a year, I've met some amazing humans, built really good relations, and I feel really good about our future. I think everybody wants to problem solve this. the amount of money I think for this is $225 million. So this isn't giant when you're talking about a federal budget, but it is giant to those of us in rural schools. It's really important that a lot of members in the House have worked on this, but they're not in markup yet. It's in committee, it's not in markup. And at some point, if it doesn't get in markup, this is just going to go away and it'll be like another 2016. There will be layoffs. People won't do necessary things in schools because you just can't. And the other thing is too, is it gets frustrating being a superintendent of some of the negative feelings there are towards public education. Public education is the future of this entire country. It's what we built this country on. Every child gets the exact same education. So that's our concern. Please help 41 states, 4,400 schools avoid massive layoffs and also keep the equity gap by funding public schools, that public schools can do their job. If only the wealthy can send their kids to private schools, we're not keeping the promise of what we built this great nation on, equality for all. We're not there. We've had many mistakes in our history, but public schools allow every single person in the country to get a quality education. And if you defund that, or you put less than 2% of the federal budget towards it, that's going to create generations of problems in the future.
Thank you, Jamie. We appreciate it.
Jamie's perspective is so valuable as a district leader. I think it's really important for folks who work at the federal level to know what's at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I really, you know, value when superintendents give us this time or they take the surveys, kind of like exactly what we were talking about last month with the REAP survey and the REAP podcast. But he didn't get to the specific numbers because I think we got a little carried away, as you can kind of hear in his voice how passionate he is about this program and how important it is to his district. But thinking about that that year that Congress failed to do the right thing with this program and they did not reauthorize it, Trinity Unified School District, that funding that they got from Secure Rural Schools went from around 500, well, I can give you a specific number actually because he gave it to me. It's $569,692 they received the year before. And then that year that it was not reauthorized, that payment went down to $35,000.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's why, you know, you hear, I think the passion, the urgency in his voice. A lot of rural communities are the number one employer, right? Think about all the educators that are a part of it, and the support staff and all the critical pieces of a school. And so when he's talking about like possibly laying off teachers, like that's why, that's a huge number. That's a significant decrease. That's more than $400,000 cut in 1 year. And so when we're talking about how important this program is and this funding, you know, it always seems like at the federal level, there's all this money. We're talking about trillions of dollars. And it's hard to talk about one program that only gets, it's hard to say only $200 million, but that's, you know, that's when you're talking about a member of Congress, that's really the numbers that they're looking at. And so putting kind of a name and a community onto what this program means, I think is really important.
Absolutely. Building off of what Jamie shared about that advocacy in that community, the big questions are, where do things stand now in terms of congressional progress with this program, and what more needs to be done?
There has been some important movement in kind of in the effort of getting this passed, but I will say we're way behind on when this needs to get done. I think we all know how late in the game we are for fiscal year appropriations. We are already, what, 4 months into fiscal year 24?
Yes.
And we have not even passed full year appropriations. And so we're really getting at the deadline, you know, in the conversations and other conversations I've had with Jamie. We didn't get to it on this conversation, but he's talked about, it's like, they should have known back in October whether or not this program is going to get reauthorized. You know how long it takes for a budget to get made, especially, you know, with the school board, you have to get the public's input. Like it's a long process. And so they're already behind schedule. So Congress really needs to reauthorize this program as soon as possible. And so where we are really is back in December 14th, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. It's interesting. We get to work with other committees on this program, not just the HELP Committee in the Senate. They passed the bill through, it was one of many that they passed through committee. And so that's kind of the first hurdle that the bill needs to to make it through. So we kind of can check one off the list, but at the end of the day, the bill needs to be put onto a vehicle that is moving, and by vehicle, I mean a bill that is moving through both chambers and will be passed. You know, we're really focused on, let's see if we can get it into the appropriations. So right now, we just had an announcement from Congress. They finally decided on top line numbers for appropriations. So it does seem like an omnibus, a CR, something is coming, and something's coming soon because those deadlines are coming. And so I think hopefully we'll get this reauthorization. The reauthorization would be until fiscal year 2026. So we'd be back having this conversation soon. But, you know, first things first, let's get it reauthorized for however long we can. And then I think there needs to be a separate conversation about how do we have a long-term solution for this, because these communities don't have any other avenue for funding. These are schools, these are students, these are communities, and having a reauthorization that's longer than 3 years, so we don't have to constantly put these communities kind of in panic mode on whether or not they're going to get this funding.
Right, because 3 years comes up so fast, especially for schools.
Exactly, and I think any superintendent or school administrator listening to this knows exactly what we mean, and if you don't know where your funding's coming from, you have to start making those really tough decisions. Like we heard from Jamie, you know, when you get that drastic cut, you have to make really hard decisions, and that impacts everyone in the community, and mainly students, and if we're fighting for students and getting them the best quality education that they deserve, then this funding really needs to be authorized, and Congress needs to do it yesterday, but we'll accept today if we have to.
So for districts who are recipients of these funds and they want to do more to advocate for this program, what can they do?
I would say, you know, something I always tell superintendents, and it's, I feel like, on a loop for this whole team, is reach out to your members of Congress. They listen to constituents a lot more than they listen to us here in DC, and really make it clear kind of what's at stake for you and your community and for your students. So how we heard from Jamie, where, you know, he was able to look back and say, like, this is the significant amount of funding that I lost last time. You have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And then anything you can do, you know, to connect it back to students or connect it back to your community about what's going to go or what this money actually means at the district level is really critical. But if you don't have that time, because I understand you're a superintendent, you know, you're responsible for an entire school district, at the minimum, you can call, and you can call your member of Congress and tell them, you know, I'm really concerned about the fact that the Secure Rural Schools program has not been reauthorized, and I strongly encourage so-and-so to vote yes for a reauthorization and do whatever they can to make sure that it's reauthorized as soon as possible. I know sometimes it can seem like emailing a staffer or calling a staffer in a Hill office can seem like a waste of time, but it really isn't. A lot of members of Congress do honestly keep a little tally. When the people who are responsible for answering phones keep a tally of what people are calling about, and so you want that to make an impact. But also, it could be the chance where, you know, like we said earlier, there's a lot of programs, there's a lot of demand for one member's attention, so they may not even know about the program. And if they know very little, and they don't really know what's at stake. They may think that you're getting, you know, $2,000-$3,000 from this program. They may not know that you're getting $500,000 from this program. So really just communicating what's at stake, telling them to do the right thing and kind of pushing them. And then I would say also reach out to your colleagues and have them do the same thing, because hearing from one superintendent is powerful. Hearing from multiple superintendents, multiple educators is cannot be ignored. If you ever need, you know, assistance figuring out who to contact, how to contact them, please, please always reach out to me, and I'm happy to get you everything you need to take action.
And you can reach Tara Thomas at tthomas@aasa.org. I also want to reiterate very quickly before we start wrapping things up that Jamie really went above and beyond by coming to DC and having that face-to-face time, but that is not always necessary. You can do so much with an email or a call to your representative.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you can reach out to your DC office, but There's probably some local folks in your district as well who works for your member of Congress. So you can always invite them out to your district and show them what you're doing and show them that if the program isn't reauthorized, some of this stuff may get cut. So they really see exactly what's at stake with this program.
Well, this has been fantastic. I really appreciate personally getting to learn about this program. So thank you for coming on. And thank you so much to Jamie Green for joining us for a conversation as well on Secure Rural Schools.
Yes. Thank you, Jamie, for your time in this podcast. But also, you know, there's many superintendents across the country, and Jamie is one of them that has been a fierce advocate in protecting this program and making sure that these rural schools aren't kind of left out in the cold.
And that's a wrap on this episode of AASA's Pep Talk podcast. We invite you to share it by using the hashtag Pep Talk on Twitter. You can access past episodes in the Pep Talk library by visiting aasapeptalk.podbean.com. And once again, thank you for joining us.